Are you ready for the future? Is your business ready? Of course, there's no way to know for sure what economic conditions we'll be facing in years to come. But there are ways to be prepared for whatever happens. In the new book, Facing Our Futures, How Foresight, Future Design, and Strategy Create Prosperity and Growth, author Nicholas Badminton offers a structured approach to planning for the worst, so your team can be at its best. Nicholas is the chief futurist at Futurist.com and a consultant and advisor to major corporations and government agencies. Here he is to share five of his big ideas.
My name is Nicholas Badminton. I'm a futurist based in Toronto, New York City, London, and San Francisco. I'm also the author of a new book, Facing Our Futures, How Foresight, Futures Design, and Strategy Create Prosperity and Growth. Now, I've been imagining futures from very early on in my life, fueled by science fiction, future tech on TV, and books that showcase ideas of what our futures may be like. And over the years, I've worked with leaders at over 300 companies and governments to create more connected, curious, and creative teams. Facing Our Futures aims to help executives, creative professionals, and people in places of incredible influence supercharge their strategic thinking and drive more profit and growth. And I'm excited to share five insights for the next Big Idea Club's Book Bites. Insight number one, we must embrace a futures mindset to supercharge strategic thinking. Now, I've written Facing Our Futures to provide an opportunity for executives, world leaders, policymakers, activists, designers, and strategists to explore and create a broader perspective about what our futures may bring us. In the book, I challenge the idea that we must solely plan for a good, safer, or ideal future ahead of us. We see so much of that in society from politicians, from tech entrepreneurs, and so many other people. We have to develop a longer-term view of our futures, and that we must embrace the possible dystopian futures ahead of us as well. The ideas presented in this book are an invitation to broaden those horizons that you have and consider integrating futures thinking into your strategic planning. And there's a major part of this to start off, and that's a shift in our mindset from what is, what we do on a daily basis, what keeps us busy and what keeps our minds at bay, to what if, to unlock curiosity and creativity and embrace what might come to be in our futures. Now, there are some key parts to this shift that I write in the book. Number one, question your own history. We have to aim to rewrite our assumptions and consider the impact of our personal and organizational agendas. Number two, practice curiosity and be courageous. We really have to share our own true thoughts in lively discussions. We also need to listen carefully to others. Number three, we need to get comfortable with ambiguity and multiple perspectives. Organizations have as many internal futures as employees multiplied by the number of interactions they have over time. And that's before we turn to face the world. So there's lots of opportunity to really explore those perspectives and really understand that ambiguity is our friend. We also must be wildly creative. We have to work fast and write down as many ideas as possible and work them through with our teams. We have to look at the possible and the preposterous. We can't really discount any solutions presented. We need to discuss them with our groups and our colleagues and our consumers and the general public. And we really need to dial it up to 10 when we think about what might come next. What's also important is that we focus on the non-zero-sum game. That means that we need to ensure that the futures that we all imagine are places where multiple people win instead of this mode of winner-takes-all. Insight number two. We must see the plurality of our futures and address the collective poverty of imagination. There it is, the future. Look at it, glorious, pristine, accessible. It's yours, but it's built by us. We're the people, the organization that can corral investors and resources to make it happen. All you need to do is believe in what we do, and it's possible. With resolve and support, we simply cannot fail. But it won't be easy. Yet nothing is truly impossible. We just need to trust in science, technology, and shooting for the moon. And we just need several billion dollars and a few years to make this future a reality. This is where we have to stop. The technocrats have taken hold of our world, and we have to be real about what's coming ahead. There's a prevalence and a big problem with this narrative. The billionaire technocrats, politicians, and fervent investors are not looking out for us and our futures. They want to define a closed ecosystem, a narrow view that can be easily regulated and policed by the terms and conditions we happily accept. so that we are being reduced to just being users. It's the antithesis to how we as humans and our complex societal structures operate. These are often the same people who think that living to 120 years old, becoming a multi-planet species, and the exponential growth of technological solutions is a bigger goal than being a thriving and sustainable multi-species planet. We have to really carefully respect and consider the relationship between humanity, the natural world, and our industrial complex, and I really challenge the very narrow view of the technocrats in the book. We must recognize that there is no singular future, and that we must address the collective poverty of imagination. In fact, the majority of organizations actively kill imagination and good ideas that push the boundaries of offering and operations. We've seen that many times over. Reigniting our imaginations and giving ourselves space to breathe and move is as important to the discipline of strategy and foresight as to any of the frameworks that we use. Reigniting our curiosity, activating social dreaming, and encouraging everyone to be open with their thoughts and feelings on multiple futures is essential to the work that we do. There's actually a huge advantage to seeing many possible futures, and reigniting those imaginations to provide vigilance in organizations is a bedrock and a foundation of a modern organization. In 2018, Rohrbeck and Kuhn published a paper called Corporate Foresight and Its Impact on Firm Performance. They managed to correlate vigilance and future preparedness with companies that recognize that the future might change the very foundation of their business. Those that prepare for change in their course of action are 33% more profitable than companies on average, and these vigilant companies have achieved a 200% higher growth rate than the average company. Seeing companies embrace futures thinking has motivated thousands of business leaders to wake up and reach out to us to start this work. The think tank I work with and other foresight practitioners around the world are busier than ever before. The truth is, if we show the opportunity for more profits and growth, it's still the catalyst for exploration and action, and we're okay with that. Today, it's time for executives, world leaders, and people shaping a path for our world to understand there is no perfect positive future, singular, and our short-term thinking is endemic and dangerous. It's time to embrace foresight as a discipline that empowers us to look at horizons that lie beyond our short-term cycles of strategic planning. We need to look out 10, 20, 30, and even 100 plus years to create long-term resiliency by considering our decisions and actions today. At number three, we have the work of exploring futures. In the book, I outline my positive dystopian framework that's evolved over dozens of engagements with clients. At the heart of this is explicitly setting out foundational principles, both positive and dystopian. They're provocative and they drive discussion. With this balance of both, it means that we can have a holistic view. When we think about positive principles, we're trying to aim for a world that addresses the challenges we see day to day in a structurally and technologically colonized world. These principles provide the ability to imagine a trajectory that drives us towards an ideal state for humanity and the natural world. And we're going to strive to design futures to achieve this. That means that we have to plan for humanity before technology. We need to design with plurality, inclusion, and equity, and we must go back to the fact that we have science and creativity to fall back on. On the flip side of that, we've got the dystopian principles. These are actually somewhat reflective of the modus operandi of so much of big business that we see today. It's based in greed, inequality, and collapse. Our dystopian principles provide the ability to imagine a trajectory that drives us to travel towards a state which will be suboptimal for humanity and the natural world. I always found that discussing these principles gets to the heart of what clients really want to do in the world. And this really helps us lay a foundation to understand how we can move forward through the stages of work in futures exploration. The first part of this is around signal scanning. We look for those distinct pieces of information, statistics, stories, and activities that indicate an impending change or an emerging issue may become significant in our future. Then from these signals, we can do trend identification. These are the general directions in which our world is developing or changing. They inherently have momentum, and they're created by existing conditions and environments. They're going to be part of the reshaping of how we see the world and how we operate within it. And from these signals and trends, we can then start to build out scenarios and really ask, what if the world is going to change? So the reference points that we have from the signals and trends indicate what might come next, and scenarios explore how people will be affected. Building multiple scenarios of many varied groups of people from differing backgrounds and demographics, and we're talking different ages, genders, sexualities, is so important. And beyond scenario building is storytelling, speculative fiction, and experiential futures. That means that we can go down the rabbit hole into more emotional and visceral explorations of our futures through fiction, filmmaking, and the creation of media and art. When we can place ourselves in these futures, we can feel what they're like. In the book, I use a fictional company called Organization X to illustrate the process. Organization X is an agricultural futures company. They're looking to build out their vision for resilient and sustainable agriculture in the context of megacities and its associated portfolio of solutions that address agricultural resiliency. That means the water, food, energy nexus and climate-related challenges, infield agriculture, agri-food systems, local and global food supply chain, and food and nutrition in relation to communities' health, wellness, and longevity. These are the areas that are most under duress in society today, and we must hold under a magnifying glass and demand transformation alongside progressive and egalitarian solutions. Number four, using stories to help us empathize with our futures. There's a quote I love from the esteemed science fiction writer Octavia E. Butler. "Every story I create creates me. I write to create myself." I write stories with clients so they can place themselves in the futures we explore together. That's when they can feel the visceral state of affairs, the societal changes, the sense of place, and the experiences of the people. This is really the sharp end of futures work, and it's the epitome of the craft. Thinking of stories that move us beyond scenarios into imaginative realms affords us the opportunity to travel down the rabbit hole into more emotional and visceral explorations of our futures. It's an invitation to experience those feelings of our futures, and it's hugely important. When creating stories of our futures, there are a number of things we should consider. Let's think about metaphors. They can humanize a story, they're descriptive, and they can inject richness with few words. William Gibson does this well with the iconic opening line in his novel, Neuromancer. "The sky above the port was the color of television, tuned to a dead channel." Very quickly, he gives us an idea of the world that we're living in that future. We need to also create unusual heroes and many more villains. It's incredibly important to throw off the boundaries and visions of what heroes are and the tropes that continue their existence. We need to look to queer, less abled and low-income people that have a place rather than a character like Batman and other rugged billionaires with unlimited resources. Again, we must think about positive and dystopian situations and effects. Positive futures are great, but the hidden systems are where the bad actions and actors can exist. If we write scenarios and stories, work to consider the opposites of the outcomes, then make them worse, more death, more despair, more impact on the people who are less able to react, then things become a lot more visceral and real, and the imagery becomes more potent. We also need to consider what mundane systems surround our worlds and weave them into the stories as well. Futures are not always realities of abundance and unlimited abilities. Think about the mundane systems and situations and job descriptions, waste management, water usage, newspapers, cleaners, accountants, and even futurists. And we also need to speak the story with bravery to the people who will agree, and most importantly, to those who will not. We must be willing to argue for the future that we see ahead of us and for the futures that we all collectively will share together. Number five, futures work is essential for impactful organizations. Now, futures work is not a side task. It's a core competence that will separate those companies that will thrive in the long term from those that will not. Organizations need a senior executive who's the arbiter of futures discussions within the organizations, a chief futurist, a person that works with the board level to influence company direction, determining decisions and engaging external expertise to supercharge thinking within that organization. Beyond the role of a chief futurist, you have to really develop futures consciousness as a capability in the hearts and minds of everyone that drives the organization forward. This is a deeply spiritual practice in many ways, and for this I've highlighted Thomas Lombardo's work around futures consciousness, and he says that there are a number of things that are important. We have to be self-aware, have self-control, and have a sense of self-responsibility. We have to have a sense of realistic idealism, the belief and in pursuit of excellence. We have to have self-growth and a progressive personal narrative. We have to have the skill and love of learning, including honesty, wonder, curiosity, humility, and the quest for truth and understanding. We also have to have the skill and love for thinking and multiple worlds of understanding, and we also need to have an expansive temporal consciousness. That's a rich and thoughtful integration of history and the future. It's imaginative and visionary, and it's really based in good foresight work. We also need to extend that into cosmic consciousness, including awe, ecological, global consciousness, and a sense of reciprocity, justice, and transcendence. We also need to have hope, courage, and optimism, and we must have love. We must be willing to include gratitude, passionate appreciation, and compassion in our work. We also need to have deep purpose and tenacity, an ethical pragmatism, creativity, and an adventuresome spirit. And also, we need to even things out with balance and temperance. Now, this all seems quite complicated and complex, but the work of Futures is deep and it's ongoing. And Facing Our Futures is a book that tries to take us in multiple different directions. And with all of the great thinkers that have come before me, that have tried to really question how we frame futures, how we push things forward. And Facing Our Futures is just my small contribution to the larger field and the beginning of a journey for so many people that are going to read the book. Thank you so much.
That was Nicholas Badminton with five big ideas from Facing Our Futures: How Foresight, Futures Design, and Strategy Create Prosperity and Growth. You might also like our book bite for The Skeptic's Guide to the Future: What Yesterday's Science and Science Fiction Tell Us About the World of Tomorrow. I'm Caleb Bissinger. Thanks for listening.